You've heard about men being from Mars and women from Venus. Hi, this is Bill Wright. Well, that concept is as old as the Bible and just as relevant. Today on the Mini Bible College, you'll see how those differences can be good and fun and celebrated as part of a happy marriage. Pastor Woodward has had many years' experience counseling men and women in their marriages, and we'll benefit today from that godly wisdom. So you ready? Let's join him.
Understanding. How important is understanding in a marriage? How important is it to the oneness between the two people? Well, I don't think we can overemphasize the importance of the oneness between two people that are joined together by God and want to experience what God planned and designed for us when He designed holy matrimony. When you get to the subject of understanding, especially after discussing communication, compatibility, and love, what you're really saying is understanding and these other links are the difference between having a living arrangement and a relationship. I've spent a lot of my ministry years ministering to men. I've taught men a lot about marriage, and I've said this to men. Everything your wife does for you, if you had millions of dollars, you could buy everything she does for you. You could buy the housekeeping. You could buy the cooking. You could even buy a surrogate mother and hire someone to have babies for you. You can hire a governess to raise the children. And of course, you can buy the sex. But the one thing that you can't buy is a relationship. Now, a secular man may say, you know, a relationship's too much hassle, man. I'm just going to buy it. As spiritual people, looking at a spiritual approach to the subject of the law of marriage and family, we're committed to the fact that God blueprinted this to be a relationship. And since it's a relationship, you have to work at the relationship. And we call understanding the growth of the oneness or the growth of the relationship. Communication is the tool that with which you maintain the oneness. If you can't communicate, you can't work on your relationship. Compatibility, we said, that's the evidence of the oneness. And then we said love is the dynamic that drives the relationship and the oneness. But we're saying that understanding is the growth of the oneness. And what we mean by that is we're supposed to understand each other. And if we understand each other, we can grow in our oneness. We can grow in our relationship. Consider the peril of not understanding each other, of living in a relationship, or we might say an arrangement, but you're not really working at it, and you're not understanding each other. You're not growing in your understanding of each other. Actually, you really just have an arrangement. You have certain things you do. Your spouse has certain things they do, and you've worked out this arrangement, but you don't really work on your communication. You don't try to solidify, you know, the compatibility where it exists, and you're not really asking God to give you the supernatural love to love each other unconditionally, supernaturally, with the love of Christ. And you're not working on this understanding each other. There was a time when this wasn't as serious as it is today. One of the reasons why the divorce is epidemic and the breakdown of the family is so alarming today is because of the way our culture is structured. What we have today, I think, is a formula for disaster, and we're reaping the disaster. A typical family, like in America, let's say the man works in New York City. Well, he lives out in the burbs, and his wife drives him to the station where he picks up the commuter train and rides into the city. And then she goes back, and she's got her world there in the burbs with the kids, and he has his world down there in the city. And, of course, he's all dressed up. He's immaculate, got his best foot forward when he goes to work. And he is thrown with people of the opposite sex. They got their best foot forward. They're all gussied up and smelling good and everything. And some of these men in this cultural pattern, they have more communication with their secretary than they have with their wife. They know women they work with better than they know their wife, and these women know them better because they talk to them more. They spend more time with them. This secretary, a confidential or a personal secretary, would get into his life. And this often happens. Those two people get together, and he dumps the woman in the burbs, and the whole cycle starts over again. And now, of course, we have it where both people pick up the commuter train, and they go to the city. And it's just not the way it used to be, And it's a formula for disaster for this reason. If those two married people are too busy to work at their relationship and they don't understand each other, well, somebody else will, sooner or later. That man will meet a woman who understands him. Or, of course, it works both ways. All of these are two-way streets. But see how that's a formula for disaster? It's a negative way of stating it. But if you don't work at your understanding of your spouse, the peril is people want to be understood. I knew a man after many, many years of just the most prolific kind of lifestyle imaginable. He came to faith, and I met with him 3 times a week for 3 years to disciple him. And I went through the scriptures, the whole mini Bible. I went through that with that man. He had the reputation for having slept with everybody's wife but his own, notorious reputation. And he told me this one time. He was a handsome, you know, Don Juan type of guy. He claimed that a lot of the women came on to him and so forth, but he made this observation one time. He said, you know all those women I slept with and had affairs with? He said, it wasn't sex. They just wanted somebody to talk to, because their husband never talked to them. And so they got with me. That wasn't because they were highly sexed or something. That was just the vehicle that got us together. What they really wanted to do was talk. And of course, you hear that the other way around. A man isn't understood by his wife, he says. He doesn't understand me. And there's no communication, and it seems that there's no compatibility, and they're not growing in their understanding of each other, or even trying to. And then you hear men say, who get involved in affairs, they understand me. So negatively stated, it's very dangerous if you don't work at the growth of your oneness. And that comes by doing everything you can to understand each other. There's a man named Dr. Paul Tournier, who was a Swiss psychiatrist and a Christian psychiatrist, who wrote To Understand Each Other. Dr. Tournier, in his book To Understand Each Other, has a basic premise with which he begins. And that premise seems so simple, you would think it wouldn't need to be stated. The premise is there is a difference between a man and a woman. He cites biological differences, physical differences, intellectual differences, emotional differences, spiritual differences. He says, men don't even worship like women do. I had an illustration of this years ago that I'll never forget. This doctor's wife came to see me one day. She was a lovely person, a godly person, very devout, very active in her church, leading the prayer groups and things, and I'd been interacting with her on some of those things in church work. Her husband was a surgeon, a very good surgeon, very successful, and she shared with me that she cried and everything, I'm so concerned that Charlie's not spiritual. And I said, well, we can pray about that. And I shared 1 Peter 3 with her, you know, what she could do and how she could pray, because only God can make him spiritual. Well, it wasn't but about 3 months later, I had a parishioner who had a bad gallbladder and a bad heart. And they needed to take this gallbladder, but it was risky because of the heart. I was there at the hospital with her husband. He was a plumber. The doctor, after we were talking around the bed for quite some time, he asked if he could see me outside. And he called me outside the room and he said, how are you scheduled this morning? I said, I'm free. And he said, well, I really need to take this gallbladder, but it's so risky. He said, they have a little chapel downstairs in this hospital. Would you be willing to go down in that little chapel and pray until I send a nurse down to tell you that we're over the top? And I said, sure. So I went down there and prayed, and so help me, at 11 o'clock that morning, I just had a spiritual experience in prayer for that woman. And I knew, you know, God had done something, and about 15 minutes later, the nurse came to the door of the chapel and said, you know, the doctor said everything's fine, we're over the top. Well, I was with Sparky when the doctor came to talk to him, you know, post-operative. And before the doctor even said anything to the husband, he rushed over and pumped my hand and said, thanks so much for praying. Oh, thank you so much. It was a miracle we got through this. And this was the man that isn't spiritual. So I called her back for another formula. I said, you got it all wrong. And I told her what he did, and she cried. Well, he was a spiritual man, but he didn't express his spirituality like a woman. And she decided he wasn't spiritual because he didn't express it the way a woman expresses it. Well, that's the kind of thing Dr. Tournier takes up in his book when he talks about, you know, understanding each other. Now, in the book, and just as we continue with the subject, I think if we're going to understand the spouse we live with, we do have to understand the difference between the sexes. And believe me, they are different, and they're supposed to be different. And as we've said many times before now, the thing that makes you attractive to your spouse is those differences. I think if we're going to understand the spouse we live with, we do have to understand the difference between the sexes. And believe me, they are different, and they're supposed to be different. And as we've said many times before now, the thing that makes you attractive to your spouse is those differences. These differences are certainly to be celebrated and not resolved. And I do think, in the light of that, then you realize how tragic it is for women in our culture to be told that in order for you to have worth as a woman, you have to duplicate the role and function of a man. That's not what gives a woman her worth. I think the thing that gives the woman her worth is the opposite of that. The role and function of a woman gives her worth in the eyes of a man. And of course, this is true vice versa. If you're going to understand your spouse, you have to understand the importance of the past. For X number of years, your spouse was coming from a certain direction, and you were coming from a certain direction. You had all kinds of background influences that shaped you. And when you intersect in your early 20s or whatever, or much later, you've got to remember the importance of all those years they lived before they intersected with you. Those years and all those experiences impacted them. And if you're going to understand your spouse, you've got to understand that. Let me give you just one illustration. People who knew Jenny and me in the late 60s, and then they come to see us here 30 years later, they expect her to be the one in the wheelchair, because in the late 60s, she was very ill. She was at MCV four times for 2 weeks for medical workups and everything. They couldn't decide what it was. We had three specialists and three separate diagnoses. One said it was rheumatic fever, one said it was rheumatoid arthritis, and one said it was dermatomyositis, and it's where your tissue rejects your tissue, and it's just a horrible thing. And then we had a fourth diagnosis. The doctor came in and said it was a drug reaction. She was reacting to sulfa and heat to send her home. Now, years later, they decided it was rheumatoid arthritis because it came back in the 80s. But anyway, she was very, very sick. When I came home, the first day she was very ill. She had a fever. She had her joints were, they call them hot joints. Her joints were just swelling up. And I got angry and depressed. I practically kicked the bed. I mean, I just got turned off about the whole thing. And she needed that like a great big hole in the head. But it helped us later, especially it helped her, to go back into the past and see if we couldn't find out why I responded that way to the fact that she was sick. And it didn't take Dr. Freud to sort it out, because when I was a little kid, my mother, who had 11 children, got very sick. I think with the last one, she was in bed the whole pregnancy, and then not too long after the last child, she became very sick. It turned out to be malignant colon cancer, and about 2 years and a big operation, then 2 more years, and the Lord took her. So she was sick all that time. And as a little boy, I didn't realize all this, but I was watching my father, and my father had a whole house full of kids and a sick wife. And he worked two jobs. He carried mail all day and drove taxi cab all night there in Pittsburgh to try to hold her all together. And then finally, he lost her. Well, I think in my subconscious mind, I sort of built up this idea, you know what women do? They get sick on you and leave you with a bunch of kids. Well, see, by this time we had 5 kids. We had 2 in diapers and 3 toddlers. I come home and there she is. She's sick. And it made me angry and it made me depressed. Well, when we sorted that out a little bit, it wasn't hard to tell why I was angry and depressed. And then I had to realize, shape up, man. This isn't your mother, this is your wife, and she needs help. You know, and so we went through several years there that were a tremendous ringer, where God grew me especially a lot spiritually. But do you see how important it was for her to understand the importance of my past? Well, she could have filed for divorce. Here I am sick, I got 5 kids, and all you do is get mad and kick the bed. But see, it's important if you're understanding your mate, if you want to understand this person you live with, to realize the importance of the past. And I think another thing we need to focus on as we try to understand the person we're married to is the sacredness of individuality. God makes us to be different. He throws the pattern away every single time He makes one of us. And that means that we're supposed to be unique. The word self in the dictionary is described as the uniqueness, the individuality of any given person that makes him distinct from every other person. Now, that person you're married to, they're supposed to be unique, individual, distinct from every other person on the face of the earth. And as you're living with them, you're discovering your uniqueness, your individuality, the thing that makes you distinct from everybody else, and so are they. And you're supposed to help them discover that, and they're supposed to help you discover that. When you put all this together, it's important to realize the definition of the word understanding. Listen to this definition of understanding in light of the fact that we're so different. Mutual agreement that resolves differences. We're so different. She's a female, I'm a male. Our backgrounds are different. We're different in so many ways. So another definition says, mutual comprehension of ideas and intentions that lead to discernment and sympathy. To understand the person you live with, you have to understand the difference in the sexes. You have to understand the importance of the past. And here's a very important point. To understand your spouse, you have to want to understand your spouse. Frankly, there are a lot of married people who don't want to. Like in counseling with a couple, I would always begin with this. Well, to understand each other, you have to want to. How about it? Do you want to? If you want to understand your spouse, then here are some suggestions. You have to be spouse-centered in order to understand your spouse. You have to apply the golden rule. This is the greatest verse in the Bible on human relationships. You have to put yourself in their place. Then you have to ask yourself this question. If I were the husband, what would I want the wife to do? If I were the wife, what would I want the husband to do? That's unnatural, but if you ask God to give you grace, you can work at it, you can do it. A second suggestion, if you decide you want to understand your spouse, is you must listen to your spouse. There's a lot to be learned about listening that most of us haven't learned. Have you ever really tried to apply that to your marriage? It's obvious sometimes when you meet with a couple that they're not listening to each other. They're missing each other. You can just tell it. When they think they're listening to each other, what that means is, I'm thinking about what I'm going to say when you shut up. That's what I call listening, but that's not really listening. Jesus said, you know, he that has ears to hear, let him hear. There's hearing and then there's hearing. Do you really hear your wife? Do you really hear your husband when they're communicating with you? I like the verse in Luke 7:44, where Jesus is in the home of a Pharisee. The Pharisees invited him there, and this woman comes in, and she weeps because the Pharisee hasn't washed the feet of Jesus. And she lets the tears fall on his feet, and then she wipes them dry with her hair. And the Pharisee's thinking to himself, if he knew what kind of woman this was, he wouldn't stand for that. And then Jesus asked him a tremendous question. He said, Simon, do you see this woman? I think that's a great question. There are a lot of different words in the Greek for see. And of course, this meant, do you really see her? What do you see when you look at this woman? I think that's an excellent question to ask husbands. Do you see this woman? Do you really hear this woman? This is in terms of understanding your spouse. I guess what we're really saying is, if you want to understand your spouse and decide you want to, then you have to love your spouse. Francis of Assisi prayed this prayer, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there's hatred, let me sow love. Where there's injury, pardon. Where there's doubt, faith. Where there's despair, hope. Where there's darkness, light. And where there's sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. That is a magnificent prayer. And the part I want to focus, of course, is this part. May I not seek so much to be understood as to understand. See, to me, the art of understanding the person you live with is to be spouse-centered, put them at the center, and then don't worry so much about whether or not they understand you. The challenge is, do you understand them? It's not so much whether you're getting love from them or you loving them. Now, these links are intertwined because they relate to one another. To understand your spouse, you must communicate at a deep level of communication. Remember when we studied communication, we talked about the different levels of communication. We said the deepest level of communication was when you were talking about who you are, what you are, and where you are, with respect to who, what, and where you think you should be, but who, what, and where they are, and who, what, and where they should be. That's really communicating at a deep level. People don't communicate at a deep level because, like porcupines trying to embrace, they get stuck. Because if you're really going to communicate, it's not just past the fall, it looks like it's going to rain today. You'll discover that when you communicate at a deep level, you're placing your heart in the hand of your spouse. And they can do anything they want to do with it. They can squeeze it, they can throw it down and step on it. Probably the worst thing they can do is they can ignore it. If you're going to put your heart in your spouse's hand, you're vulnerable. And I don't think you're ever going to achieve understanding between you and your spouse until you're willing to do that. And that means that if you're going to communicate at a deep level, you have to learn how to deal with conflict. Because when you get into deep communication, there's going to be conflict. They're not going to say what you want them to say. If they're really a good spouse and they're concerned about your growth, they're going to say what they feel you need to hear. And you may not want to hear that. And boy, that's going to be like being stuck by the porcupine. You're going to withdraw like the turtle into the shell unless you can learn how to deal with conflict. If you're going to have this deep level of communication, you have to learn how to deal with anger. Do you believe that God allows the spirit-filled Christian to be angry? Does God think that anger is a good emotion for the Christian? Think about this for a minute. I had to work this out years ago when Jenny and I got married. I mentioned this before. I was filled with rage and anger. But I had to learn some things about anger in order to cope with it. If you get into the study of anger, there are two questions you should always ask about anger. What's the source of your anger? What is the true object of your anger? It's very seldom the person that you're venting this anger against. It's usually yourself. It could be you're angry with the boss, and you can't stick your fist through his face, you know, so you stick your fist through something when you get home. But just to turn some light on the subject of anger, listen to this. If you're angry, don't sin by nursing your grudge. Don't let the sun go down with you still angry. Get over it quickly, for when you're angry, you give a mighty foothold to the devil. Don't cause the Holy Spirit sorrow by the way you live. Remember, He's the one who marks you to be present on that day when salvation from sin will be complete. Stop being mean, bad-tempered, and angry. Quarreling, harsh words, and dislike of others should have no place in your lives. I think that's pretty obvious there that God is not permitting spirit-filled Christians to be angry. If you get it in a better translation, it's when you're angry, God's realistic enough to know that you're going to be. Don't let the anger lead to sin, and never let the sun go down upon it. Back in Genesis 4, here's the illustration of anger that delivered me, and I recommend it to any of you who may be dealing with the problem of anger. Here's one of the great stories of the Bible, right up front at the starting gate of the Bible. In the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. That meant he was depressed. So the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. Its desire is for you, but you should rule over it." Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel your brother?" He said, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" And God said, "What have you done?" Now in this little drama, I think you have a great teaching about anger. You got two men, Mr. Acceptable, Mr. Unacceptable. They both offer offerings to God. It's actually Cain's idea to do this. Now, God is pleased with Abel's offering, but he's not pleased with Cain's offering. And you'll notice in the wording, it says he was pleased with Abel and then his offering. He was not pleased with Cain and then his offering. One of them's acceptable, so God accepts his offering. The other's not, and so God won't accept his offering. Now, the drama continues. Mr. Acceptable walks by in front of Mr. Unacceptable, and Mr. Unacceptable kills him. And then God comes to Cain and he asks him these questions. Why are you angry? Why are you depressed? And then here's the best question he asked him. If you do what's right, will you not be accepted? And if you don't get your stuff together, if I can paraphrase it, this thing is going to destroy you. Now to me, that's a great lesson in anger. Here's another phrase out of Ephesians. Paul says, he who loves his wife loves himself. What do you think of that? In addition to understanding the importance of the difference between the sexes, the importance of the past, all these many, many things, we also have to come to the place where we understand the importance of legitimate self-esteem. In Matthew 22, verses 35 to 40, a lawyer asked Jesus a question, and it brought forth a great statement from Jesus. The lawyer's question was, of all the commandments in the Old Testament, which is the greatest? And Jesus said, love God with all your being, and love your neighbor as yourself. On those two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Now, if you study that statement of Jesus, what he's saying is there are three directions in life that you have to get together if you're going to be a happy, well-integrated personality. You've got to look up and get that together, and you've got to look in and get the stuff together you see when you look in, and you've got to look around and get it together when you look around, because if you're right with your uplook and you're right with your inlook and you're right with your look around or your outlook, then you're a well-integrated person. Now, in those three directions, in that great statement of Jesus in Matthew 22, he said, look up, and when you look up, love. Love God. And then he said, look around and love your neighbor as yourself, which means he was saying, when you look in, love yourself. Now, there is what you might call a legitimate self-love. There's a self-love that isn't what it should be. Loving yourself doesn't mean every time you pass a mirror, stop and have your devotions. That's what a lot of people think it means. I have a friend who summarizes it this way, and this friend was addicted for many, many years, and in connection with coming through to sobriety, he had to learn these three things. Love God completely, love yourself correctly, love one another unconditionally. When my friend was able to break through on all three directions, when he could say that he loved God completely, he loved himself correctly, then he could love others unconditionally. And he's been sober for almost 10 years because that really does work when you get that in place. But see, when Paul says, he who loves his wife loves himself, he's letting us in on something. If you don't love when you look in fact, if you hate yourself, if you have self-contempt to the point of self-anger, to the point of self-destruction, well, you're not going to get along with anybody. Here's what I'd like to conclude with tonight. You're living with somebody else, sharing life with somebody else. And as you share life with somebody else, you want to understand that person you live with. Now, it's impossible to separate communication from this understanding because it's the tool that maintains the oneness, and the understanding is the growth in the oneness. If you have that uplook and you have communication with God, if the man has it, if the woman has it, I think then you have the possibility of having not only communication on the horizontal level, but you have the potential of understanding each other. Because here's the truth. I don't understand myself, and I don't understand my wife. I don't think she could ever understand me without God's help. David showed so much wisdom when he joined up with Jeremiah. Jeremiah said, the heart is deceitful above all things. Who can know it? In the next verse, he said, only God. Well, if that's true, then like David, we should look up and say, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts. Help me understand myself. That's the only way that we can understand ourselves. And that applies in the marriage relationship where we're trying to understand each other. If one of the spouses has no communication with God, then the communication and the understanding is going to be blocked accordingly. The only one that can do the understanding or the communicating is the one that's in touch with God, because only God understands us. In James 1:5, James says, when you realize that you've got to have help in order to understand the things you don't know, just ask God for the wisdom you don't have. Now, try this in connection with your spouse. You don't understand your spouse. Perhaps they're very complex and hard to understand. Well, I got news for you. God understands your spouse. God understands men. God understands women. Women may not understand men, and men may not understand women, but God understands men and women. So you trust God when you take His blueprint, and He tells you, women, this is what you should do toward men. You men, this is what you should do toward women. Well, He understands men and women, so just do what He tells you. I think you'd be surprised at how it works. But when it's very, very complex, and you don't know what to do, ask God, and God will give you the wisdom and show you what to do. Because we simply have to look up and look in to our heart and the heart of our spouse before we can look around and understand each other.
What attracted you first to your spouse? Think about that today. Was it the areas you were alike or different? How do you feel about those two areas today? That'll keep you busy thinking today, won't it?